From NPR and the Futuro Media Group, it's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. You know the green card? Well, now, something called the blue card could change the lives of migrant farm workers in the U.S.
Knowing that you have lawful status will allow many workers to, in essence, say, if I am wronged, I can move to a new employer. I have options.
Also, it's called voluntary departure. But the ACLU says Homeland Security coerces immigrants to sign their own deportation papers.
And the cops is like, who are you? You can't be here. I'm like, I'm his wife. We're married. We have two kids together. And I told him, I'm like, just make sure you don't sign anything.
And a 17-year-old Latina from Arizona raps about democracy and wins a prize.
Life is what you make it. Not the government's job to save it. The thing upon democracy is it's only what we created.
All this and more coming up on Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. No se vayan. It's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. The Senate has officially begun debating the immigration reform bill known as S-744. President Obama says he hopes Congress can finish by summer's end. A lot of the bill's provisions have caused plenty of high-profile drama and conflict, but few people are aware of one provision that could have a big impact on the estimated 1.5 million undocumented migrant farm workers in the U.S. It calls for the creation of special blue card status as opposed to a green card. Sean Powers reports from Illinois.
56-year-old Reyes Alvarez of Guatemala came to the United States illegally more than a decade ago. He wanted to make enough money to support his family back home. We've changed his name to protect his identity. Alvarez lives in Illinois, about 2 hours south of Chicago. Each day, he commutes half an hour to his job at a dairy farm. He spends 48 hours a week milking cows and cleaning their udders. He's proud of his work, but it comes with sacrifices. Alvarez hasn't seen his wife and children for 12 years.
I sometimes call in the morning to see if they had a good night and evening if they had a good day. I always keep track of how my family's doing.
Alvarez's main goal is to pay for his kids' education back home. His grown son, Guillermo, works alongside him at the dairy farm. Guillermo says being here illegally casts a shadow over both of them.
It really affects us a lot. Well, the truth is, we should not drive here in the U.S., but we have to drive for different reasons. Besides that, I would like to study or do something else, but I'm afraid if I drive a lot, the police will catch me. We can't even visit our relatives.
Now, a proposal in the U.S. Senate could put their fears to rest by allowing them to apply for a new ID called the Blue Card. To get it, undocumented workers would have to pay a processing fee and show they've paid income taxes. They must also not have a felony or violent misdemeanor conviction. After 5 years, Blue Card holders could then apply for a Green Card. That's about half the waiting period for many other immigrants. The measure has support from both growers and workers. The American Farm Bureau, for one, says if farmers lose access to migrant labor, there could be a $5 to $9 billion hit to the country's economy. Pat Bain understands this. Bain oversees a pig farm in Illinois. He says it's become harder to find American-born workers to clean and feed the pigs and also help with artificial insemination and births and vaccinations. So he's turned to migrant labor.
It's not a clean job, and it's hard work. And so everybody has their opinion or their ability to make their choices. But, you know, when it comes to producing food, those are the jobs that we have that need to be done to produce the food.
Bain says the blue card system will make it easier to attract and retain skilled workers who aren't afraid of being deported. At the Farm Labor Organizing Committee field office in North Carolina, Justin Flores says it's about time lawmakers recognize the value of migrant labor.
Farm workers for a very long time have been working and living in some of the worst conditions of any workers in this country. And part of the reason is because they've largely been undocumented, and that really makes it a lot more difficult to organize and try to request better wages and conditions.
Under the Senate proposal, farm workers with legal status would have added protections, like prevailing wage rates, housing, and transportation. They'd also have more of a voice to speak up if they're being treated unfairly. But the blue card does have its opponents. Roy Beck heads the group Numbers USA, a national organization that supports reducing both legal and illegal immigration.
When you give an amnesty to an ag worker, they will eventually leave agriculture work and compete with Americans in construction and manufacturing and hospitality and other service jobs.
Beck says that's what happened when a 1986 law granted some immigrants amnesty.
Foreign citizens who come in and work agriculture are like any other human being. If they've got a chance to make more money somewhere else, they will tend to do that.
The Senate provision says blue card holders, depending on the number of days they work each year, would have to stay in agriculture for at least 3 to 5 years before they're eligible to get an expedited green card. Meanwhile, farm workers Reyes and Guillermo Alvarez are closely watching what happens with the blue card provision, hoping they get to see their family without fearing deportation. For Latino USA, I'm Sean Powers in Urbana, Illinois.
Now, for this week's News or Noise segment, we decided to look at how the media is covering the different labor proposals in the immigration debate.
The path to citizenship for highly skilled workers may be getting much easier.
Proponents of immigration reform say it is critical to the economic lifeblood of our nation.
The technology industry needs all the bright people they can get. They can help it.
But first, let's look at what each of these proposals would do. The Senate bill would increase the number of visas for high-skilled workers, and it would loosen hiring restrictions for companies, like having to look for U.S. workers who can fill the position before bringing someone in from abroad. As for the farm worker deal, the current bill would allow faster legalization for farm workers. Ted Hessen is the immigration editor at Fusion, a joint media venture between ABC and Univision.
I think that the media has been more focused on high-skilled workers than farm workers. That's pretty evident to anyone following the coverage of this. I wouldn't say specifically that the media, members of the media, are neglecting the farm worker deal. As with a lot of things that we see in the media, we gravitate towards the stories that we think our readers might be interested in. And in this case, you have tech companies like Facebook, like Google, getting behind this push for immigration reform. So in a way, having immigrants working in farm work, I think to most Americans, is not a new idea.
So what are some of the questions that media has yet to answer around the tech worker proposal?
You know, Microsoft and these other companies are saying that they need workers from abroad and that U.S.-born workers can't fill these jobs. Are there ways for them to find people in the U.S.? Is it a question of they don't want to pay enough? I haven't really seen any reporters out there answer that question in a convincing way.
And what are some of the stories about farm workers that still haven't been tackled by the media?
Who are the farm workers in America, the U.S.-born ones or immigrant farm workers who are here already? And how are they going to respond to a deal like this? And how will, if the immigration reform bill passes, how will that change the landscape for them?
Ted Hessen is the immigration editor at Fusion. He spoke to us from Washington, D.C. If you hear something in the media that confuses you or just doesn't sound right, tell us about it and we'll look into whether it's news or noise. Just hit us up on Facebook or Twitter. And now, another immigration matter, deportation. The ACLU has filed a lawsuit against the U.S. government for what it calls unconscionable practices by immigration agents. According to the suit, immigration officers pressure undocumented immigrants to sign what amounts to be their own deportation orders, even though they may have a case to remain in the U.S. John Carlos Frey reports now on the coercion of immigrants.
23-year-old San Diego resident Samuel Nava and plaintiff in the ACLU lawsuit was on his way to buy his fiancé an engagement ring when he was pulled over by police because his license plate light was out. He had no U.S. identification, so a Border Patrol agent was called to the scene. I spoke to Nava via Skype.
A Border Patrol official came where I was and, you know, I explained my situation to him. You know, I've been living in the United States for like 10 years.
Nava, born in Mexico, had been in the United States since he was 14. He came with his family on a visa that had since expired. They reapplied to stay in the U.S. and were still waiting for papers. When Samuel Nava was presented with the voluntary departure form, he knew he wanted to fight his case in court, but he felt threatened by the agents.
He asked me, do you live with your family? Who do you live with? And I told him, you know, I live with my mom, my dad, and my sister. And then that's when another Border Patrol guy said, oh, like, we should go get him. And then the guy said, like, no, we should wait until like 3 or 4 in the morning, so it will be like more frightening for them.
When they were talking about going and getting your family at 3 o'clock in the morning, were they making a joke?
It didn't seem like a joke.
Nava signed the form, thinking that if he didn't, his entire family would be rounded up by Border Patrol. He was quickly deported to Mexico. What Samuel was not told was that by signing the voluntary departure, he also would be banned from re-entering the United States for 10 years. In November of last year, Gerardo Hernandez, an undocumented immigrant and also a plaintiff in the lawsuit, was stopped by a police officer for talking on his cell phone while driving. His U.S. citizen wife, Aide, rushed to the scene.
And I get there and the cops is like, who are you? You can't be here. I'm like, I'm his wife. We're married 6-7 years now, and we have 2 kids together. And I told him, I'm like, just make sure you don't sign anything.
But Gerardo said, while in custody, he was pressured into signing a voluntary departure form. Agents told him that if he tried to fight his case, he'd stay in a detention facility for months, if not longer.
He was so scared of being in jail, so
he believed the agents.
He believed the agents, and he signed the voluntary departure.
So he was deported?
Yes, he was deported.
In addition to alleging that authorities routinely coerce immigrants to sign for voluntary departure, the ACLU is also arguing that the actual form itself is misleading. I was able to get a copy of the form and found nothing informing immigrants about a 10-year ban for signing it. In addition, according to the ACLU, many of the plaintiffs had strong legal grounds to stay in the United States. Ildefonso Martinez Sanchez was apprehended in November of 2011 by police and turned over to Border Patrol for not having any U.S. ID. His wife told him not to sign any forms. Juana said they told him he would be in detention for a long time if he didn't sign. Being the sole supporter of the family, he was desperate to reunite with them. So he signed the form and was quickly deported. Why would immigration officials try to intimidate and coerce immigrants? One possibility is because of incentives. In the Buffalo, New York sector, for example, Border Patrol agents were given cash bonuses, vacation awards, and gift cards up to $100 to increase arrests that usually led to deportation. After being deported, Ildefonso called Juana and reassured her he was coming back. In March of 2012, he crossed the border illegally to reunite with his family. Ildefonso Martinez Sanchez died in the Arizona desert from exposure to the extreme elements. I contacted the San Diego sector of the U.S. Border Patrol about the ACLU lawsuit and voluntary departure procedures. I was told to contact the Department of Homeland Security in Washington, D.C. I did, and have yet to receive a response. For Latino USA, I'm John Carlos Frey.
Coming up, we'll hear from Judy Reyes, one of the stars of the new Lifetime show, Devious Maids.
I relate to the criticism because that was my initial reaction when I was told about the project. But my mom was a housekeeper.
That's coming up. No se vayan. Welcome back to Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. It's summer premiere season, and the big news for us is Devious Maids, the first show in primetime television history to feature an all-Latina leading cast. The show is on the Lifetime channel, and the executive producer is Eva Longoria. So here's the premise. Five maids in Beverly Hills become good friends, and they uncover scandals and mysteries while working in the houses of their wealthy bosses.
What is this?
Our new uniform. We're going to wear it at work.
Why?
Because those people in that house need to be reminded of what we're there to do. Rich boys, they never fall in love with the help. Trust me on this.
Judy Reyes plays Soyla Diaz on the show. You may remember Judy as sassy nurse Carla Espinosa on the sitcom Scrubs. She's with us today to talk about her new role as a devious maid. Welcome to Latino USA, Judy.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
What has it been like to be part of, you know, a show that is making history, a show with all Latina leads?
Well, for me, it's been really glorious. You know what I mean? Because the only reason that I finally took the job was Ana Ortiz, Rosalind Sanchez, Daniel Ramirez, Eric Ganem.
Those are the co-stars on your show, right? Rosalind Sanchez from Without a Trace, Ana Ortiz, who played Ugly Betty's sister.
Those names, the Z's and the vowels, you know what I mean? When we got to do all our scenes together as the girls, we just thrived and chatted and everything. And a lot, this has been, and to a great extent, some of the most rewarding work I've been able to do as an actress.
Do you feel like this role of Soyla, you know, some people, the critique has been, oh my God, Latinas playing maids, oh God, yet again. But do you feel like you've been able to sink your teeth into the character of Soyla as an actress?
I actually feel that I have. And I relate to the criticism because that was my initial reaction when I was told about the project. But my mom was a housekeeper. She cleaned houses for a living, and she only did the work with utmost dignity. So I connected to that part and the relationship that my character Soyla has with her daughter. I'm one of four daughters, and I also connected with that. So I know that I could bring that element, and I could make that, like, you know, rise above, you know, like espuma en el café, you know what I mean?
So what happens in the very first scene is that you have this character, the white boss, who basically makes a threat that she could get the maid deported if she doesn't, you know, step up to the plate. So you guys are going there. You're revealing this. You're showing the power dynamic between Latina maids and their bosses. But sometimes you actually show that the power dynamic can also be inverted.
Well, absolutely. But also to expose that do work at the hands of people who are definitely cruel, and that you have to work behind the scenes to use the power that you have sometimes. Because the show is called Devious Maids, and you also want to play characters with dimension. Often what, in my opinion, I think what happens that el Latinos, in order to be looked at as quote-unquote role models, we often are pedestalized on the big and the small screen. And I'd like to be able to play characters with complexity who are capable of errors and mistake and naughty behavior.
Actress Judy Reyes plays Soyla in the new show Devious Maids, which premieres June 23rd on Lifetime. Destiny Galindo is a 17-year-old rapper from Phoenix, Arizona. Her song, American Vision, was just announced as the first place winner in the MacArthur Foundation's Looking at Democracy contest, a national contest for creative media pieces about American democracy. She raps about the political process and having a say in it. Here's a listen.
We got a voice, we got a choice, and I'm committed to making this point. Life is what you make it, and the government's job is safe.
Destiny Galindo joins us now from Tempe, Arizona. Welcome to Latino USA, Destiny, and felicidades. Congratulations, first place.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited. How are you guys today?
Great. So when you got the phone call from the MacArthur Foundation that you had won a $25,000 cash prize for writing and performing a rap about democracy, what'd you think?
I was blown away completely. You know in the movies, whenever they jump up and they scream and shout, I had no idea that me and my mother would act in such a way.
So you are rapping about something that probably a lot of people just say, well, that sounds boring, rapping about democracy. But what was your inspiration when you had to come up for this, you know, write the song about democracy? What inspired you?
What inspired me was the fact that I was able to have my voice heard, and the fact that I was able to put my rapping skills along with my political views, and I was able to combine that into one.
Did some of what's happening in Arizona with SB 1070 and, you know, questions of racial profiling and deportations and fear, did that have something to do with your song about democracy?
You know what? That actually had a huge effect because I had a best friend. His parents got deported and he had no choice but to leave with them because he had nobody out here, which is not okay. And that happens a lot. I'm talking not just once a year, not just twice a year. I have friends that go to school with me and all of a sudden they're just gone. And then they send me an email, hey, you know, this is what happened. It's like, it's not fair. And there's no way around it because nobody just wants to listen.
In your song, you talk about democracy and poverty. Let's take a listen. We're working together in poverty, because it seems like the rich just trying to get richer. Seems like the poor people just dying quicker, fed up with all of it. Where did that particular part of talking about democracy and poverty come? Where was that kind of inspiration?
That was from within, from, you know, seeing struggle throughout my family, seeing struggle throughout people on the streets, seeing higher class and lower class. There is a huge gap in between that has not been fulfilled.
And in your rap song, you actually take on the power of the vote. You're 17, you haven't voted yet. Why do you believe in the power of the vote? Where did that come from for you?
Democracy is what we create. And we are able to tell them and we are able to have a say. And I don't really think people understand that. And if they truly don't understand that, then they won't have a clue that they can do it. Voting is very important, very important. As soon as I turn 18, I'm all about it. Voting.
Destiny Galindo's rap song, American Vision, won first place in the national Looking at Democracy contest sponsored by the MacArthur Foundation. And for this week, that's Latino USA. If you have any comments or suggestions, just call our listener line at 646-571-1228. You can also friend us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. We are Latino USA, all one word. Our program is produced by Deborah George, Andres Caballero, Lita Hartman, Daisy Rosario, Diana Montaño, Michael Jones, and Milton Ruiz. Latino USA is produced by The Futuro Media Group in Harlem. The program was founded at the University of Texas at Austin, and I'm executive producer Maria Hinojosa. Join me again next week for another edition of NPR's Latino USA.
Latino USA is made possible in part by the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation and by the Marguerite Casey Foundation, dedicated to achieving a more just and equitable society for all, and the Ford Foundation, working with visionaries on the front lines of social change worldwide. News or Noise is funded by the Why News Matters initiative at the McCormick Foundation, fostering communities of educated, informed, and engaged citizens. Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Lumber Liquidators, supporting the Ronald McDonald House Charities, the National Braille Press, and NPR. Information at lumberliquidators.com. And the Lemelson Foundation, supporting inventors and invention to improve lives in the U.S. and developing countries. On the web at lemelson.org. And the William and Flora Hewlett Foundation, making grants to solve social and environmental problems at home and around the world. On the web at hewlett.org. This is NPR.